This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Welcome to the program, and especially a big welcome to my guest again. Oh, I'm so glad you're here again, Dr. Mark Schoen. Longtime friend. He's a sex educator and a filmmaker. We're going to talk about some of that. And we sort of sandwiched the filmmaker Shona McDonald in between my last interview with Mark, and then we're going to follow up since he has seen the documentary Candace, so I want to get some of his impressions. And we're also going to talk about Sex Smart Films, his website, his, well, this is the Netflix of sex education, actually. We're going to talk about another documentary that he's been working on, Love After War, and his film, Trans, and there's lots to say about that. I've covered a lot of these things with Dr. Mark before, but not so much the first topic. Glad to have you back, Mark.
Glad Hello. To be here, Diana. Hello.
Good. Hello. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes. Okay. Are you in a good place for reception on your phone?
I am.
Okay, terrific. Now I'm hearing you even better. So good. So after the last show, which was last month, you were able to see the documentary Candace by the filmmaker Shona McDonald. And we did talk about some of Candace's legacy from your point of view, and it, but what do you want to say after seeing the documentary? Do you want to add on to what you said before about Candida Royale?
Well, I certainly suggest anyone who has any interest in this subject should see the film. Mm-hmm. It's a tribute to Candace, and I don't think she's gotten the accolades that she deserves. You know, considering she took a big risk by making films that are female-oriented and also sexually explicit. She bucked the system, so to speak. And if you look back, there are therapists today that suggest their clients watch her films because they're realistic depictions of sexual behavior, where many adult films are just shows. So
she was the first one to do it.
Pardon me?
She was the first one to do it, and starting her femme productions in 1984, and I recommended her films a lot to my clients, especially back in the late 80s and 90s, and even now I recommend some of them. They look a little dated, but it's still there. The information is there. It's female-centric.
And let me make a comment on looking a little dated. You know,
yes.
To me, a film is a tool.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure the film has accurate information and realistic depictions.
Mm-hmm,
Candace's film do that. You know, I had someone say to me, I can date a film by the pubic hair. So, I think more important than the pubic hair is the type of the sexual depiction that's in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Candace's are good role models.
I agree with you, and one of her films that I actually have loaned out, because I have it in my collection, is The Bridal Shower, which Candace, starring Nina Hartley, and Candace produced and directed it and wrote it. And that's, you know, there's some really good stuff in that, because the women have gathered for the bridal shower, and they decide to talk about their boyfriends and husbands and what and rate them as lovers and what they could do more of and less of, as I recall the plot.
Yeah, and it was a useful film for women to see, because if you think back, when did women talk honestly on camera about their sexual activity? Before Candace.
I don't know of any. As a filmmaker, you might, but I kind of doubt it.
I don't know of any. So, kudos to Candace.
Yes, and you told me either on the air or off the air one of our times when we were talking that another risk that she took is that the film distributors were not used to female-oriented pleasure.
They had never seen focusing on female pleasure. It was all focused on male pleasure. So I give her distributor, Adam and Eve, two thumbs up for taking on her films.
Mm-hmm, yes. And that happened a few years ago, didn't it?
Oh, yes, it happened.
Yeah.
I want to say late 80s, early 90s.
Yes. Yes.
Because at the time, I was working for the Better Sex people.
Sinclair Institute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You made quite a few films for them.
More than 30.
More than 30. All right.
Yes.
And I know you have a few that I help narrate up on your website.
Yes. Yes. And, those films were also instructional.
Yeah.
And sexually explicit. And that was, very dramatic to have films that were both explicit and instructional.
Yes, that's right. And
in fact, I remember someone looking at one of the films and then coming to see me and said, "So you make medical porn?"
Medical porn? That's great.
Yeah.
How did you answer that? Or did you just laugh like I did?
I laughed. I think he was shocked that they were so sexually explicit, and further shocked that there was this healthy narration. So, he had never seen anything like that.
Yes, yes. Well, I made
those, I was going to say all those films are available on my website, sexsmartfilms.com.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that.
There are a number of them that you appear in.
Right. Starting in, for me, 1994. Because How to Seduce Your Lover Forever, I wrote, and then I narrated the thing, and that was my audition piece for the Sinclair Institute. And but I want to circle back, because we're going to talk about a little more about your website, but let's just finish up with Candida Royale's documentary, Candace, the documentary about her. She is quoted in the film as saying, this would be Candace, otherwise known as Candida Royale, "I wanted to prove it was possible to make an artfully crafted adult movie that could appeal to intelligent adults and not insult them and degrade women." And that was, and the other thing that her films did, she didn't like the word pornography, but...
And I don't like it either.
Tell us why.
Because if you look at the derivation of pornography. It means films about prostitution.
Oh.
So I don't like that. In fact, I usually use the term adult films.
Yes, yes. I think that's much better. And Candace was like that. She, and it was really something that she showed women enjoying sex. What? Women enjoying sex. Wow. And I wondered, I heard that Candace's story was cited as the inspiration for Maggie Guggenhall's character Candy on the HBO drama The Deuce. Had you heard that?
I have heard it, but I can't confirm it.
Yeah. I did not see that. I don't have HBO, so I didn't see it. Did you ever see it?
No, I did not.
No. Okay. Well, so we were both good friends with Candace, and it was really hard to see her in the film toward the end of her life because of the chemo. She had ovarian cancer, and she was searching for her mother, and she had been in the limelight for so many years talking about pleasure and female pleasure and her movies, and she was a good... She was a good face for this, and so lots of media sought her out. So
yeah, she was the go-to person for anyone looking or wanting to talk about a feminist perspective on adult films.
Mm-hmm. It was probably around 1992, maybe three, I was on the Jenny Jones show with her. Candace had told the producers that I was a sex therapist and that I really believed in her films and loaned them to certain clients. Or got them to rent them out in those days, the video stores, right? And and there were women in the Jenny Jones audience. One woman said, "I think if a woman has good self-esteem, she doesn't need this sort of thing." I mean, she was just really kind of a backward statement, but I had some fun with it. I said, "Well, I believe it's actually the other way, that a woman who has good self-esteem and confidence often has good sexual confidence, too. And she might watch this film thinking, not only could it spice up my relationship with my lover, but I could learn some things, because we do learn visually." Of course, you say that a lot, I'm sure, that we learn visually.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I can't tell you how many therapists I've talked to that use films like Candace's to help people who are having difficulty with sexual issues.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to give them something to look at that has a positive image.
Yeah. I went with Candace to the American Psychiatric Association's meeting also in the early 90s, and she was a real hit because she had some parts of her films there that she was showing, and she was just so articulate and intelligent, and she was something else. And the psychiatrist in those days, there weren't many females in the audience, just males, were just riveted. And
I mean, she broke the rules. She made films that were unlike any others that were ever made.
Mm-hmm.
So she, you know, and she set the stage for others to follow suit.
Like maybe Erica Lust, would she be one?
Yes, I think uh-huh. she would be a good example.
Yeah. You know, I was seeing a couple for quite a while who were past tense evangelical Christians, but they had waited until they got married to have first intercourse, and but they were still quite religious and went to church regularly, but they felt that watching explicit films could help them keep their sex life, and I of course reinforced that. And they one time they were in Barcelona and they visited Erica Lust's studios, and they told me she was very gracious and that she liked to make her films, and this was several years ago, but with her teenage son in mind, that someday he would grow up and be proud to see this film that his mother had made and be educated to boot. So that kept her standards pretty high, I think.
Uh-huh.
A lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Candace was the forerunner. She set the stage for all of this. And she was a good businesswoman, too. And she was happy to promote herself and her work. And she just did it so well.
I remember her coming to some of the professional meetings. You know, the mm-hmm. American
oh, yeah.
Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. She attended those meetings and spoke to lots of therapists.
Yes, she did, and she was admitted to membership by ASECT.
Yes,
and she was very proud of that.
Yep.
And she and Dr. Patty Britton would do kind of a film review of different porn, not just Candace's, but different explicit adult films, kind of yes. do a review. And those were always entertaining and kind of fun. Anything else that you, I mean, you probably have said all that you want to say, at least for this program now.
I just feel that Candace was a talented woman. I don't know if you know, she went to an art high school in New York and studied music and dance, and she was a talented singer and dancer. And
yes,
she, you know, got into the adult business at first, and I think she appeared in about 25 films before she started Femme Productions and started making
yes.
her own films. So
mm-hmm.
she had quite a career and made a big
impact. She did. And she really had a good voice. I heard her sing jazz songs, and of course I've seen her dance even a few times
yes.
at the conferences, and boy could she dance.
Yes.
That's how I like to remember her, of course, this vibrant, intelligent, fun-loving woman who had faced a lot of personal challenges and traumas in her life, and she learned early on, when she was in those so-called liberating times, that sexual freedom worked better for one of the genders than the other. And, of course, that would be worked better for men. And this is a quote that she said in the film. It was kind of confusing. It gave us our right to say yes, but took away our right to say no. And mm-hmm. she went into therapy, she admits this, and it was so helpful for her because she had conflict about the films she'd done and even then the business that she started. She had some conflict, all based on her early adult films and even what happened to her growing up.
Yes. But I think toward the end she had resolved these issues, except for finding her mom.
Exactly right.
So.
And that's why Shona McDonald, well, a big part of her documentary was that last part. Shona said she thought that Candida Royale was interesting to talk about because there was a lot in this complicated, riveting woman's life. And she said the film, the documentary, has four threads, and that was part of the challenge and why it took so long. How do you weave these stories? And furthermore, and I bet you know about this too, they did it on a shoestring budget of about $70,000.
Yes.
And you've told me that you've worked with no pay on documentaries that you're passionate about, including Love After War. But let's get to that third. Let's talk about Sex Smart Films. Have we said all that we wanted to say for now about Candace?
Yeah, I think so, and I'll say it again. I recommend watching this film and watching some of Candace's films.
So. Yes, which they can find on Adam and Eve, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think some of them might be available on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes. Okay, good. Well, we're both recommending her. I think she left an amazing legacy, and this is a beautiful documentary too, Candace. I'm so glad that my husband Brian and I were able to go to Vancouver, BC, to see the world premiere for this film on May 4th of this year. Okay, so Sex Smart Films. This is a great website. I recommend this. Your website to many and suggest certain films that they can watch. And I know a lot of therapists do the same. It's a sex educator's dream come true, this website of yours, Sex Smart Films. And you said some of the, how many films are you up to now? It must be over 500.
615. And 11 years ago, I started out with 46.
Yep.
So
that's impressive.
Come a long way.
Yes, yes, you have come a long way, and I remember seeing you at a Quad S or ASECT meeting at a Asilomar in about 2009, and you were selling memberships. Just tell the listening audience a little bit about the membership part of it and some of your most viewed videos on Sex Smart Films.
Well, you know, a therapist might recommend a film to a client, and probably the most common viewing by a sex therapy client is the Sensate Focus Part 1 that deals with sexual anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the client can go to the website, sexsmartfilms.com, and pay 99 cents and do a pay-per-view. And it's about a 10-minute film.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get a one-month membership for $16.99, a three-month membership for $34, and a one-year subscription for $99. So that gives you access to the 615 films for 1 year. But the film categories are divided into education, research, and therapy. And they're further divided into age groups. So we have material that are geared toward adults. We have films that are geared toward children,
teenagers, older people, disabled people, so gay, lesbian, transgender. You know, we deal with sexual orientation and gender identity. So we run the gamut. And there are films from 52 countries, and there are 250 commercials from 52 countries that depict condom commercials, HIV public service announcements, breastfeeding public service announcements. And it's interesting to take a cross-cultural look at sexuality and to see what's aired in different countries, and then comparing, for example, the HIV rate in different countries and teenage pregnancy. And it's interesting to see that the films, commercials that have the most explicit information in it are the countries that have the lowest HIV rates and the lowest teen pregnancy rates. So,
and the Scandinavian countries are at the top of the list, aren't they?
And I'm very anxious to see if there's a correlation.
Well, there's got to be a correlation, because most people can benefit from more sex education, for sure.
Did you hear me, Diana?
Yeah, I did, but I also heard something that sounded like an ocean. But you're not on an ocean.
No, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. Do you know that large bodies of water put off lots more negative ions, which help you feel better?
I did not know that.
Yeah, and then so it's counterintuitive the way they're named. Positive ions come with winds like the Santa Ana winds and the winds that go over the Alps. They have a German name. I don't remember what it is. But large bodies of water, waterfalls, they can get near enough. When I was years ago, I had a girlfriend in Hawaii where I lived with my late husband, Charlie. And after his death, I went to her backyard because she had a waterfall in her backyard. And you can get a lot of negative ions coming off waterfalls and also large trees. So it probably isn't a mistake that people go to the shore, as they say, the shore, as they say in New Jersey, right? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel better. Anyway, your sex smart films, yes, the sensate focus exercises are good. I think the science of orgasm is a wonderful one. The true story of how babies are made, and you just sent me a picture from your Facebook. This cute little girl. Oh, no, she's not looking at that book. She's looking at navels. Belly buttons are not navels.
Belly buttons are navels.
Yeah, right, are navels. Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you for correcting me. Of course.
That's all right.
The cutest little girl, and she's looking at that book, which is sold through Amazon Prime.
No, Amazon.
And just Amazon, not Prime.
Yes, right.
But your movie Trans is on Amazon Prime.
Yes, it is.
And also iTunes.
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. So the question is, do we want to talk about love after war, or do we want to talk about trans? We have a choice. They're both very interesting topics.
You tell me what you're more interested in.
Well, I have seen the movie Trans a couple of different times, and I have some transgendered clients, not currently, but I have had, and I've also had parents with a trans kid. And here in Seattle, you know, we're kind of progressive here, so The Children's Hospital actually has a group. Seattle Children's Hospital has a group for parents of trans kids.
That's wonderful.
It is. It really is, because a lot of parents of trans kids are upset and they don't know what to do. How can they best support their kid?
And it's because there's been a lack of education dealing with gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can see the kids who get that kind of education are much more comfortable with it. And I can give you one example. I did a screening here in Washington, D.C. of trans. And after the screening, a couple came up to me with a 7-year-old little girl.
Mm-hmm.
He said hello to me and said this is their daughter, Eliana, and she's in my grandson's class at school.
Ah.
Well, the next day, I saw my grandson, and I said to him, is there a girl named Eliana in your class? And he said, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, did you know that Eliana is transgender? And he said, yeah. You know, like,
very accepting. Yeah.
So it just shows that the parents went to the school, spoke to the administrators spoke to the teachers spoke to the children, and they were very accepting and understanding. And they never got to the point in their life where they thought, oh, this is unusual. So I think education is a real key factor in this area of gender identity.
It's huge. And you said to me on a previous program that the suicide rate among transgenders was really high, like 41%. Maybe it's even higher now. But you said that your movie had saved lives. Trans had saved lives.
Yes. Well, there's the movie educates people. And I've been to countless numbers of screenings in colleges and film festivals, and there's always such a positive reaction. And we talk about children, teenagers, adults who are transgender, and I'm proud to the way it turned out and the way it has educated people in this area. That when the film was released in 2012, it was a big deal. And now we have television shows that deal with transgender. We hear about it in the news. Dr. McGinn, the surgeon in the film, was on CNN a few months ago when our current administration said they will not provide health care for transgender people who are in the military. She went on and said, any active military person who needs any kind of surgery, I will do it free. And
now tell the audience her story, because she is featured in your film. She's become a friend. You said she was on a panel just last week after you did a screening of trans at what is considered a mostly conservative town in New Jersey.
Yes, she was in the military. She was in the Navy. She was a flight surgeon. And upon being discharged from the military, she began to do what she calls gender confirmation surgery. So, and last week we did a screening in New Jersey, and it was mostly LGBT people and their families, and we just got such a warm reception. Dr. McGinn did state has done about 30 free surgeries for active military people. And when she...
How generous of her!
Yeah. Very generous. And they had her back on CNN, and she said the cost of this health care was less than the cost of one weekend in Mar-a-Lago.
Oh, that's sickening.
Yeah. So.
And oh, but there's another part of Dr. McKinn's story that I think is fascinating. And I can't remember whether you told me or it was in the film, but the fact that before, so she transitioned man to woman, but she had some of her sperm when she was still a he, frozen for the future.
Right.
Can you tell that the rest of that story? I love the story.
Well, she had the sperm frozen, and they artificially inseminated her partner. And we tell this story in the film, and you see the birth of fraternal twins, a boy and a girl.
Mm.
It's just amazing to see this happen and to see the love in this family. It's just an incredible story.
I hope those twins are doing well. I bet they are. And I bet they're good-looking twins, too, because Dr. McKinn is really a good-looking person.
Yes, they're great kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but more important than physical attractiveness, although it helps a bit, but is the character and the generosity and the fact that she's done 30 no-charge surgeries for military people is really impressive.
Yeah. You know, she is an activist. She's...
Mm-hmm.
She is really putting herself out there to help this community.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and you know, and she is. She is helping.
Oh, it's absolutely.
A lot.
You know, there's no doubt. Yeah. She's done surgery on very young people. And she's done surgery on very old people. She did a vaginoplasty on an 87-year-old person. And I said, why would someone wait till they're 87?
Uh-huh.
And the story is this person was married and had children and didn't want to hurt the wife. So the wife passed away, and this person said, I want to die my authentic self.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, yes.
So that's the story, and she made that happen.
Well, that is very impressive, and it must be fun for you to have a friendship with her. Now quite a few years, and to have her be part of your panels when you do a screening of Trans.
Yeah, well, it's always, you know, a privilege to work with her.
And she must feel the same about you, Mark.
Yeah.
Honestly,
we're good friends.
I know. So let's talk a little bit about one of your documentaries, Love After War, and I'll put the website. Where are you in the process? Because this has been another labor of love for you.
Yeah, well, we had two agreements, one with the Bob Woodruff Foundation and one with Walter Reed Hospital, that they were going to be able to review the film before it was released. So we gave them the film well over a month ago, and we still haven't gotten the full response. So we're waiting.
You're waiting. Yeah.
Yes.
You told on a previous show I did with you, you told of a story of a soldier at Walter Reed coming out of a coma, and his first question was, is my junk okay? His first question coming out of... So this is really, really important that... And you deal with this very well in the clips that I've seen from your documentary. How to help injured veterans heal their relational wounds. That's huge. And it can take a while because there's a lot of psychological trauma, which has been just chipping away at the foundation of human interaction.
You know, you see these people who have been either physically or mentally injured, traumatically injured, and then we take care of these injuries, but then they go home and no one deals with the after effects. How does this affect their intimate lives at home? And I was shocked to see how much it affects their lives. And it's something our medical profession, by and large, doesn't deal with. They are beginning to deal with it at Walter Reed, and I tip my hat to them. But
exactly.
It's not easy.
So this film could also help teach professionals on how to deal with injured vets.
Yes. Yes.
And the power of touch and how it can restore relationships. In your Sex Smart films, you have a film about sex workers talking about how important touch is. So, some of their clients, the sex workers' clients, don't even want to have intercourse. They just want to be touched.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Because they're touch-starved.
And, you know, some of them aren't even able to have intercourse. You know, they've had injuries to their genitals.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's the first time I've made a documentary where I've actually cried during the interviews. And some of them, you know, are just heartbreaking stories. I mean, would you like me to tell one of them?
Oh, please do.
Here we have a young man who enlists in the military when he gets out of high school. He becomes a sniper, and I didn't know a lot about snipers, but they order snipers when to fire. They don't just fire on their own. And there was a man in the street, and I believe it was in Iraq, and he was throwing bombs indiscriminately into stores and vehicles and killing lots of people. And he was holding up a child as a shield.
Oh, that's pure evil.
And he was ordered to fire. And he killed the child, and he killed the bomber. And I remember him saying, pardon me, this is an exact quote, how the fuck am I ever going to get that image out of my head? And
difficult that would be.
He's had a difficult time. And I don't want to tell any more, but I mean, he's doing better today, but he went through trauma.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't imagine doing something like that. So these are the kinds of things you'll see in the film. Another is a woman who was in the military in Germany. Her commanding officer ordered her to report to his barracks at 7 p.m. And she said, "What for?" And he just said, "That's an order." She gets there. He opens the door. He's smoking weed. He brings her in, and he rapes her.
Oh.
And I said to her, "Did you report this?" And she gave me a look like, "What a stupid question."
Mm.
She said, this was my commanding officer. Who am I going to report it to? So.
What a dilemma. And I bet I bet this is fairly common in the military where women are sexually assaulted in one way or another.
Well, I don't know how common it is, but I heard about it more than once during this.
Yes. Yes.
So that's the kinds of stories we're telling. And fortunately, there is better help today than there were many years ago. Many years ago, no one addressed these issues, and these issues were there. So.
But finally, there is more openness, and for sure, getting more information on sexual health can make all the difference, and overcoming, or at least making the PTSD less strong and invasive into the person's psyche.
Yes. So.
Yeah. Well, so I hope you hear from Walter Reed. I mean, this is.
Oh, we will hear from them.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of when.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Because you're telling a very powerful story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and overall, you're really promoting pleasure and connectedness in relationships. That's what we all want. And these young men and women who go to war, the operative word here is young, and they have their whole lives ahead of them, and then they have this kind of trauma. I mean, that hurts my heart to think about that. Young man, the sniper, who, in order to kill the bomber, had to kill the baby too, the child. And he can't get that image away from his memory.
Yeah.
Well, you've made lots of documentaries in your career as a filmmaker. But this must be an especially hard one to do.
Yes, because most of them, you know, I did a film about Betty Dodson and her artwork, which was just pure pleasure.
Oh, yeah, and she's such a character and fun.
Yes, and I did a documentary called Triple X Marriage about a married couple who were in the adult film industry and them telling their stories about working with each other and working with other people. So, you know, those were more joyful.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But you really need to tell the story and you do it. Love After War. People need to know this.
I think it's an important story to tell, and I hope it promotes understanding and promotes more education to the health professions in this area.
Yeah, there's lots to be done because there are therapists trained at the various vet hospitals. But as I understand it, even at the hospitals for vets, some of these therapists are not even fully trained about what to do with soldiers who've had genital injuries. And I mean, that's a very telling story that you told before, that so the soldier, or I'll repeat it, coming out of a coma, first question, is my junk okay?
Yeah.
And he probably was only a 20-year-old guy or something like that. And men certainly identify, I'm going to say the obvious, with their penises. And to have it shot off, oh, my God. It's unthinkable.
Yeah. It's, you know, to say it's traumatic, you know. And I was talking to someone about post-traumatic stress disorder, and they objected to the term disorder. They said, this is, if you have something like this happen to you, it's a normal reaction to be traumatized. It's not a disorder. And why do we use that term to say so? I think we have a long way to go in this area, but I think we've come a long way. And I just think we need to keep moving forward and helping these people who've risked their lives to help our country. So,
I couldn't agree with you more. What was the film about 40 years ago or 35 that was with Jane Fonda and
Coming Home.
Coming Home. So I remember seeing that. And so that was a very thoughtful film because it portrayed the guy coming home and he's now paralyzed, right? But it portrayed that sexual activity doesn't just have to be penis-centric. It can be all these other things that Sensei Focus teaches people to do. But then, you know, it was a big deal coming home, and then there wasn't very much follow-up on it, or maybe I missed it.
Well, you have to remember how long ago it was.
Yeah.
But it didn't. I don't think it got its due because it was way ahead of its time.
That's what I'm inferring, yes. Yeah. So, any new projects? It sounds like your professional plate's pretty full. But any new projects that you can talk about?
I did a 20-minute video for Widener University. Widener University has the largest sexual health program in the country. And this was their 20th anniversary. So I did a 20-minute video on the history of their program, and it was shown at the ASEC meeting this year.
And you just got back from that, didn't you?
Yes. So
in Philadelphia, yeah?
Yes. So, and it was very well received, so.
Well, congratulations, Mark. You do such good work. You're just... I'm so fond of you. You know that. I mean, you have
like
character.
That.
Thank you. But you have character and talent and integrity. And that's really important because for all these years that you've worked, you've worked with lots of sexually explicit stuff, and you can't come across as a a sleazeball and do that kind of work and get people to trust you who are taking off their clothes in front of cameras.
Right. Yes. I've always, when I go to these meetings, I always try to dress well. And it's for the reason, you know, a lot of people think, oh, he makes sex films. And mm-hmm. I try to look very proper. I don't know
well,
if it works.
You pull it off. I've seen you, and very professional. And that, I think that helps sell your films, too, for somebody who hasn't seen one of your films. Well, pretty soon the music is going to come on, because we always stop a couple of minutes before the top of the hour. I'm so glad your film about Widener University. And where is that university again? It's California?
No, it's in Chester, Pennsylvania.
Oh.
It's about a half hour from Philadelphia.
Okay, yeah, okay. And but people that want to pursue graduate work in sexuality can go there because it's fully accredited.
Yes, they do sex education, they do sex research, they train sex therapists, and
yeah.
They have a lot of students, and it's a very diverse group. So,
well, that's good. You mean male, female, trans people, LGBTQ people?
Yes.
Okay, there's the music, Mark. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Diana.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye, everybody. E se ti perderai